I'm pleased to be here. This is my first time at the National Immunization Conference, and one of the people I work with said, LG, you're going to be going to immunization boot camp. And one of the things I've been impressed with is certainly the quality of the presentations and the quality of the information, but really is the passion that folks have that come to this meeting. And I want to share some of that passion with a project that I'm a part of. I'm a family physician, and I'm at Oregon Health and Science University, and I direct the Oregon Rural Practice Research Network. And what I'm going to talk about is a partnership to understand how childhood immunizations are given in rural Oregon. We're trying to learn a little bit more about that, and so this first slide shows Oregon's pretty diverse. And the one picture there, that's the Holiday Family Cattle Drive down the main street of John Day. That's not dust, that's steam in February coming from the nostrils of the cattle. And the fourth person, as you're looking at that from the left, is one of the research people that I work with, who's a medical student that's there with us. So we have a project team that represents this partnership that I talked about between the Oregon Department of Human Services Immunization Program. Nathan here was a part of that before he left for the CDC in Atlanta. We have a qualitative researcher from the New Mexico Practice-Based Research Network, RealsNet, Andrew Zussman. This is our longest-standing project. It's been going on now about 4 years, and we want to share. What I want to share with you is as much the process as the information. So you're going to need one of these handouts because the PowerPoints are going to be just limited to a few. And I'm following one medical student's advice who told me, he said, LJ, my medical school education's been stolen by PowerPoint. So the learning objectives are to recognize the opportunities to engage practices in quality improvement programs through a partnership of a practice-based research network such as ours and a state immunization program. As a practice-based research network, we tend to reach practices. And that's what folks who are trying to improve immunizations are all about, are trying to reach clinicians. And we're a tool to allow that to happen. And we've been, I think, pretty effective with this. And what we don't have that the immunization program brought, where they brought their own toolkit plus their expertise to the table, and we were able to do a lot of connecting. That's what we do with this. And then second is to apply the participatory mixed methods approach to understanding and describing childhood immunization practices. So this is what our network looks like. We were founded 6 years ago. We're all rural. And we use the Office of Rural Health definition, which means that in order to be rural, you have to be in a practice located 10 miles outside a radius, 10-mile radius outside a centroid of 30,000 or more people. And so most of Oregon, using that Office of Rural Health definition, at least the land mass is rural, and about 1.3 million out of the 3.7 million people are rural. We have 144 clinicians, 43 practices in 35 communities, and they take care of a lot of people. And you can begin to see that you can really start to understand some healthcare delivery issues with that. We've divided the state up into three regions. You see the different colors there. We actually have a regional research coordinator, one who's located in the southern part of the state in Klamath Falls, one who lives in LeGrand in the northeast corner, and then one on the coast in Lincoln City. We called them PERCs before, practice enhancement research coordinators, but they didn't like to be called PERCs, so they're now called regional research coordinators. So the project's got three phases. We were funded early on just to look at our clinicians from the American Academy of Family Physicians Foundation PBRN stimulation grant. We had a little bit of money. We were just going to survey our clinicians, and then the Department of Human Services Immunization Program, the CDC, stepped up. Why don't you find out about what everybody's doing around the state? And so we sent surveys out to all the folks that were listed on the zip code that met the Office of Rural Health criteria for rural. So we sent out mailings to nurse practitioners. The physician assistants and physicians are on the Board of Medical Examiner list, so that's where we got that list from. 670 returned a survey, and 413 qualified for analysis. That means that they had to be taking care of children ages 0 to 36 months of age. And 335 of these folks reported that they at least gave some immunizations. And so we got this initial information, but we wanted to find out more. You know, it told us some things, but we really still didn't feel like we could really understand things. So we were able to, again, partner with our immunization program and say, why don't we go in and look at 11 practices in depth and go and talk to people. So we went and did key informant interviews of staff, clinicians in these practices. We actually interviewed the county health department folks because they're a very important part of the immunization program, as you'll see in rural Oregon. And we did focus groups of parents in these practices. We did chart reviews and some direct observation in these 11 practices. And these 11 practices, there was some exclusion criteria. One of them was that they could not have participated in an AFIX, a quality improvement study before. We wanted to get somebody that hadn't done that. They also had to be using ALERT or willing to start using ALERT, which is our statewide registry. And it turned out that they were all these 11 practices were family practices, and I'll talk to you about that in just a bit. And then the third phase, and that's what we're going to spend some time talking about, is feedback. We learned some things, but we wanted to find out, you know, is that really true? Did we get it right? A lot of times when you do research or quality improvement, you assume it's true. Well, we wanted to take the information back out to the practices, and we did to each. We actually only met with 8 practices because 2 of the practices had dissolved. It's a very unstable environment practicing in rural primary care. And so one couple left, and their student health officer or student health physicians at a university. Another one said, I'm going to go to the emergency room. And then a third practice was going through a lot of administrative throes, and they couldn't find time to meet with us. So we met with 8 of them, and that's what this is generated on. And so myself, our research coordinator, and the health educator from the Oregon Immunization Program traveled out to these 8 rural practices. And we either met for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Whatever worked for the practices, we'd do it. It was for 90 minutes. And so what I'm going to do is take you through this in a lot less than 90 minutes because Nathan's going to give me the hook when it's time. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit how we structured this practice report because we're sitting around the table engaging the practices in a conversation, not just clinicians, but their staff. Because it's the entire practice that we're meeting with, and because they're the ones that are responsible for delivering immunization. So we shared some clinician and practice demographics about where immunizations are given, looked at feasibility and barriers, attitudes and opinions about childhood immunizations, what are their screening practices, and then we developed a list of evidence-based factors associated with high immunization rates, and we wanted some feedback. Do you agree with this? And then finally, we worked to have their rates or immunization rates for these children in their practices presented to them by the Oregon Immunization Program health educator. But I didn't start with that because I knew if I were going to start with that, it would have blown everything I wanted to do because they would be just focused, well, how come my number's like this? And they would have had lots of different reasons for why their numbers were the way they were. So here we're going to go through the practice report. So I'm going to start, and so you need to have one of these to kind of go along with me because that's the end of my PowerPoint. And so you've got, they're back in the back table if you don't have one. So just to talk to you about what do these practices look like, because I think it's really important for you to know what these folks look like. They primarily are pretty rural, particularly the phase 2 practices, those 11 practices I talked to you about. They live out in the boonies. And they're small practices. They're mixed. Oftentimes, they have nurse practitioners and physician assistants. And you'll find that most of the practices in rural settings have a mix of clinicians. And in our state and in our network, you're going to find that a lot of these are private practices. These are people that got up. They can't pay themselves. They got until they make some money, and so they got overhead expenses. A number of them are rural health clinic status. They qualify for that. You can still be private practice and be a federally certified rural health clinic. It's just a better reimbursement model so these folks can make a living. And in our phase 2 practices, a fair number of them had electronic health records, and I think we're going to see that trend continue. So we asked, what do they administer? And they administer the ones that you think they would. This is on page 6, the next one. And we wanted to find out if they're still doing that. And I don't think there are any surprises here. It didn't turn out that there were any surprises for us. So, let me know if you think there's some surprises here. They actually did pretty good. I was pretty impressed with how they did. And when you look at this, the blue, what's shaded in blue, is what the individual practice is like. So these vary from one practice to another. So if it's shaded in blue, this practice did all of those things. And then the numbers that you're seeing over there are the statewide sample of the 335 clinicians who gave at least some immunizations. I actually skipped a page here that I didn't mean to skip. I didn't realize they're front and back. My research coordinator was trying to save money, and the one I had before didn't have the back. But we wanted to find, this is an important point, we wanted to find out where immunizations are delivered. And we found out that 40% of folks were giving all the immunizations, this is statewide, for the patients in their practice. 20% were giving no immunizations, yet they took care of children ages 0 to 35 months. And the majority gave at least some, which meant they were referring a lot. And where did they refer to? They referred to the health department. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. So we wanted to find out the reasons for this referral, and that's on then page 7 there. And this is important because it's tough making a living out there, and these practices, as you would have seen on the demographic side, only about 15% of their patients are made up of children ages 0 to 35 months, you know, so 85% are other ages. And so what they just reported was, we don't get paid enough. The vaccine is not available. The parents say, I want to go somewhere else. Oftentimes that was insurance. And vaccine storage and stocking were issues. And at the time we did this survey, we're having an influenza shortage. And you can see this clinician's comment there. We stuck in some quotes here, and the clinician says, influenza is embarrassment to the system because we order every year. We cannot get it. Yet the grocery stores, we have to send our patients to the grocery store. It's horrendous. And the elderly that hardly get out, we should be able to give them immunization. For God's sake, we should be able to give them immunizations in our office. And we're the last people on the priority list to get them. So the docs are feeling like they're having a tough time being a medical home sometimes when there are shortages of vaccines. And it was a significant issue for them. Next, we asked about, you know, do you give all the immunizations, this is on page 8, all the immunizations that are indicated. And I may not get through all this, and you can read through it because I don't want to rush through. But, we're sitting around, so we have a conversation. So basically, I've got these probe questions. I think you should have them there that are in yellow that I kind of triggered this. And so they would respond. So they were open-ended questions. I wasn't really presenting the data as much as that. And then we would look at the data, and most of them were giving all the shots that were that the child was due that time. The next one on page 9 is kind of interesting. You know, you're supposed to give immunizations if the kid's sick, right? I think that's the best practices. And so we had these scenarios, 4-month DTaP, 12-month DTaP, and a 12-month MMR. And we had these conditions, fever 102.5, otitis media, gastroenteritis, and I think URI, and bronchiolitis. That was the other one. So I just focused on a couple of them here. And most clinicians would give it if the child came in and had gastroenteritis, but most of them thought we were nuts if we were going to be given an immunization to a child with 102.5. And they kind of verified that when we sat down around and talked to them and felt like that didn't make any make much sense, and so they didn't do that. So on page 10, I think this is some fascinating information on page 10, and we asked about attitudes and opinions, and we asked them to agree with a number of statements or disagree. And one of the things that we had the impression of is that a lot of clinicians feel that the main reason why parents show up to the doctor's office for the visit is for receipt of immunizations. You know, this is the main reason for well child care. And they reported that in the statewide survey, but when we actually talked to parents and the docs in these practices, they didn't agree with that. They said, you know, we're tracking patients, we're doing developmental and behavioral screening, we're doing a lot more. So immunizations are just a part of it, and parents confirm that. One of the things that surprised us was safety. We asked about safety of immunizations concerns me, and 28% of clinicians either somewhat agreed or strongly agreed with that statement. And there were a number of people that when we went around to talk to them brought up the rotavirus issue. But the other thing was, a lot of these vaccines are new. And it's like using a new drug. We don't want to be the first person on the block to use the new drug. We want to wait and see that there aren't any problems with it. And so that's where the safety came. How am I doing? 5 minutes, okay. So we're on page, where are we at here? Page 11. That's kind of important, because we expect practices to screen children that come into their office for their immunization status. And what we found was that, they do it quite a bit of the time, particularly for well child visits. They feel like they're screening. But for acute care visits, they're not doing it much. And when you talk to them, they say, look, we're too busy. We're behind. I've only got one medical assistant. She's got two patients to room. It's just not feasible for us to do that. And so they were just telling us they couldn't do it. And we need to work at it. But after we got done talking to them, we thought, maybe I'm going to start doing that. So they thought about that. So then we asked about other current immunization practices, and we found that most folks offer vaccination-only visits, but they don't like to advertise it when we went to talk to them because they want the kids coming in for well-child visits. And if they advertise it too much, they think people just come in for immunizations only and not get the well-child visit. Most of them participate in VFC, and in Oregon that's important because 52% of our kids qualify for VFC in Oregon. That's throughout the entire state. A few people sent out reminders. I like this. I got to read this quote because I really like it. A parent said, send a postcard that it's time. I mean, just like when I take my animals to the vet, I always get a postcard from them telling me when my animal shots come due. Not to compare my kids with animals, but you get them from the dentist when it's time for your appointment or it's time for a checkup. And so they kind of heard that pretty strong. I'm going to get caught short here, and I don't want to crowd on his time here. But the next, we were looking at immunization tracking systems and ALERT, and that was presented at an earlier presentation by Jim Godino, who's with the Oregon Immunization Program that works with us. A lot of folks are going ahead and submitting data to ALERT, but less folks actually access it. That means they actually go and look when a child comes in to see where they're at with their immunization. It was good to see that most of them didn't rely on parent recall as documentation. That was helpful. And then the last thing that you can look at on page 16 is we came up with a list of factors that we felt were associated with high immunization rates. And you can read through those. I'm not going to go through those. They all agreed, but they thought that some were a little more important than others. And so we're beginning to tease out what do they think, where should we spend most of our energy on doing this. And the last comment that I want to make is after our health educator presented their immunization rate data, we did this in 8 practices. We wanted to close the deal, and all 8 practices signed up to meet with her to talk about getting involved in AFIX. So we're 8 for 8 in connecting the immunization program's AFIX office to the practices. We'll have to find out about what the follow-through has been on that, but at least we were able to connect on that. Great. So thank you.
Thanks. Mm-hmm.